Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to episode 299 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I am Trevor Anderson. I'm going to send you over to Jon Snow. I mean, Jason Rugard, I'm sorry. Jon Snow is alive, though.
And he's taking, he's taking his first breath tonight, right?
Spoiler alert. Oh,
yeah.
Too late. Oh, haha.
I think I'm the only person that doesn't watch Game of Thrones. Don't tell anybody. Tonight's show, we're going to be – this is actually episode 299, take two, for you crafty listeners out there that downloaded our clusterfuck of a 299 that was out there. We had some technical issues and some problems. We took that down
and
supplanting that.
It strangled itself.
we killed that Jon Snow version, and we're back in this form. It's kind of like the DC Universe with Green Lantern. But hey, we got trivia. We got reviews for Batman and Superman, Krampus, The Revenant, Dirty Grandpa, Ride Along 2, Creed, The Fifth Wave, and trailers for Deepwater Horizon, The Magnificent Seven, and the Roberto Duran film, Hands of Stone. Got a lot of shows tonight. In fact,
A lot of shows.
So let's get into this trivia here. This is a little weird. What Guinness Book of World Record does Lord of the Rings film own? Like, what are they?
I didn't know they had one.
Neither did I until I saw this on the DVD supplementary shit, and I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, what is it?
It's most use of false feet. They had 60,000 pairs of hobbit feet made.
Well, but I wonder how many, I mean, you know, to get against Book of World Records, all you got to do is call them, right? I wonder how many people could set a record by just doing something stupid like that. It's not really a record, is it?
Well, it's not like bicycling around the world with an egg on your fucking head or something like that.
But it's just, this is something that was necessary for the movie. I don't know if it counts as like a feat of anything. A fake feat is a feat.
It's a feat unto itself.
Yeah.
And that is spread over three films, so it's like 20,000 per film, really.
Yeah, well, you know, now they would all just be digital feet, so.
Yeah, so that's that is the first.
No one has a chance of beating this.
The first trilogy. They have that record by a foot. All right, let's get the bad humor out of the way first. Let's talk a little bit about the negative criticism that has been run down on Batman and Superman. It's really, they say hamper the box office. That's debatable, but I read an interesting article.
I don't think it's debatable.
I don't know. I don't know if that movie was ever going to do better than that. It's dark, man. I mean, it's not.
But then
fun.
It did hamper. I mean, that's the whole point of what hampered it, right? Is that people saw it and then said, it's not that good.
I think they said it's not for children is what they really said. And that's not what's
Well, they may have said that as well, but.
Marvel is not having that problem with their films. They definitely have adult themes, but they are for children. The article in Variety suggested that Batman and Superman might play better on television when attention isn't, you know, when people can catch it in chunks and bits and this and that. And it kind of led me to thinking that there are certain films that play better when you catch them on cable or, you know, television per se, with Spike or TBS or TNT, one of these cable channels that play movies in very cut up forms. You know, take a 2-hour movie and spread over 3.5 hours. And sometimes those movies work for me for 10 minutes that never worked before. Did that happen to you ever?
I mean, yes, it does, but that's such a rare thing. I don't think that that's going to be the case with this. You know, I think this is going to be what it is. I don't think anything can change this. You know, even if you re-edited this, it probably wouldn't play any better. You know, I haven't seen it yet, but everything that they tell me and from everything that I have seen of it, it looks very locked into what it is.
That it is. And let's segue right then into the review of Batman versus Superman, because I've seen this now 2 times. I was really not enthusiastic about it at all the first time, bordering on a disapproving review. And the second time, I see it more for what it is. The story is extreme. I'm telling you, if you haven't seen this once already, try to follow that story and what is going on every beat. And there's clearly things missing, which is interesting because you got that the pre-release 181-minute R-rated cut coming. So I'm curious to see what that's going to look like.
Yeah, that's the version I'm going to watch.
Because that makes sense, because this feels like there are things missing, particularly segues from sequence to sequence and how we got from here to there so easily, and just the fumbling of introducing the next generation of characters. But the score is good, and there are some moments that I do sing in this film, and I had no problem with Affleck. as the Batman.
Yeah, everyone's saying that he's very good, but that still doesn't do anything for this movie. Does it do anything for Affleck-directed Batman movies?
I think they're going to be stronger in a lot of ways. Yeah. But this is the Watchmen of, you know, of superhero films, and this is Snyder kind of working that sensibility into the Batman Superman world, and it feels like
they, or maybe it doesn't need to be.
I don't know, because this movie is really, it's very all over. I mean, I actually liked Eisenberg's performance better this time too. I thought he was okay as Lex and what he was doing. The first time I couldn't get past that I thought it was a Facebook, a Zuckerberg impersonation of what he had done on the social network. Yeah. But here I could see at least what they were trying to achieve with the dialogue. But
do they need, I mean, would it have played better had it been worked up to a little bit more? It feels like the darkness. I mean, Man of Steel, you know, is a mess. Let's be honest. Is this as messy as that, or did Man of Steel actually kind of work up to this?
Man of Steel is a mess, but Man of Steel is a piece of coherence compared to this.
Really,
in the fact that like Man of Steel has a through line. This is kind of like here, and then we're here, and then this guy is doing this over here, and now we need a reason for them to meet in here, and I never knew that. Bruce Wayne's mom's name was Martha. Did they make that up for this movie? I knew it was Thomas.
I know, right? Wayne. I felt.
I don't remember Martha Wayne being in that at all.
When I saw that too, I was like, wow, that's. Why do they have the same name?
Well, it's so that Martha Kent and Martha Wayne, they can share the loss of, you know, mothers and things like that. You know, there are some good moments.
And that helps having the same name.
But hey, the score is fantastic, and there are shots in this that are great, especially that opening with the pearls and the gun going off and Wayne's parents being murdered, which you've seen now like five times in cinematic form. If you watch Gotham even more.
But, yeah, we needed that again.
It's in a montage sequence, so we're very quickly through that, but it's done artfully and with a pulsating score.
Why did we need it,
though? I don't like the Wonder Woman theme. Do we need it? No, of course not.
Yeah, that's kind of what I feel about this. Everything I've heard, it feels like if you're gonna do Batman versus Superman, that's some like uncharted territory, and it shouldn't be just some basic shit, which is what this sounds like to me. You know, they fight a little bit, then they become friends to fight the actual bad guy and all that kind of stuff. It sounds.
The first sequence when Wayne enters a metropolis that is basically having its 9/11 because Superman's up in the sky fucking around with Zod, and the collateral damage from that is pretty intense and like well executed, and it starts it off on such a right foot, especially because it's like mankind is introduced to the Superman, and it says the Superman, because it puts you at like against him in a way, you know, it's like it's us against him. And you get glimpses of what Superman's doing in the sky. So it's cool how they're working in that ending point, especially when people had
what happened to all the people that Superman fucked up with the end of Man of Steel? That was a big complaint.
Well, they're directly referencing that. So that's nice that they're tackling that head on. But what they end up doing with Batman and making him truly a criminal just isn't that interesting. It's not that interesting to me. Let's move on and talk about Krampus, though, because I'm interested to hear about this holiday comedy, horror comedy for the holidays.
Yeah, Krampus is sort of Krampus.
No, really?
It's true. This is a movie that originally you think has some balls to it. You know, they kind of kill some people off and things, but, you know, do they really? And then there's a switcheroo at the end that's just so ridiculous. I mean, it's like a switcheroo on a switcheroo, you know, it's a silly movie. I wish it was better. That's really all I can say. I don't know. I don't want to ruin it for anyone that is going to actually watch
this.
It.
So maybe we'll talk about this a little bit further.
So
here.
Yeah, but it's just,
how's the comedy in it? Is it funny?
It's not funny. No.
The trailer looked funny.
I mean, the idea of a horror Christmas comedy maybe is funny, but the execution here is not. I mean, there's no execution as far as comedy goes. From what I could see, there was a lot more horror than comedy. And just the idea of it, I think, was kind of the comedy, which didn't really work. And Krampus, you know, he's not in it enough again. And when he is, it's silly. He has a silly face. I don't know, man. You can watch it. Other people could watch it. I think pretty much everyone said that they didn't like it for the most part.
It got a terrible
and I understand it. Yeah, I can understand. It's not anything special, and it does things that you didn't think that it would, which at first I thought was cool, but then when you really think about it, it's like, I see you know, they're not really doing what you think they're doing.
Well, this movie is written and directed by Michael Dougherty, if I'm not mistaken, who did Trick or Treat, which is kind of in that horror comedy vein, which I like.
That wasn't that bad. Yeah, that one's pretty good.
Yeah, and so you're saying Santa's Sleigh still remains the top horror?
You know what? Santa's Sleigh is just plain out fun. So yeah, as far as if you're looking for a Christmas horror comedy, that one is I found surprisingly a lot of fun.
Me too. Yeah, I think that's still the peak for me on that. Yeah. Although the most horrific, like scarring holiday Christmas movie I ever saw, like horror wise, was Silent Night, Deadly Night 1.
Oh,
I had a neighbor that rented that when I was way too fucking young. And I Spit on Your Grave, and I thought they were both real, honestly.
Well, I Spit on Your Grave is, yeah.
It's pretty intense.
Back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, has a little scarring there. Let's talk about Ride Along 2, which is the sequel to the mega hit for Ice Cube and Kevin Hart, really the launching point for Kevin Hart, and a movie that continued Ice Cube's, you know, fledgling career there. He wasn't doing much, and then Ride Along hits, this NWA movie hits, now another Barbershop, and Cube's right back in the fold.
Yeah.
Ride Along 2 comes along, and I really didn't like this movie. What did you think?
I know, right? I see. I mean, I watched the first one and this one.
The first one's great compared to this.
Oh, I don't know if it's great.
Compared
to
this?
The first one's decent. I mean, they're really the same fucking movie, man. I mean, as far as like these two go, like, you know, it's the same fucking movie, right? He's got to prove himself to Ice Cube yet again, right? And doesn't take him seriously, but he does somehow, you know, falls into doing kind of all the right things. So it was really, I felt like such a rehash of the original, which I guess is to be expected, but I mean, I would agree it's not as good as the original, mainly because I think we've seen it already.
I just thought it was more hectic. It was a little like coarsely written.
It is because it's not because they're trying to shoehorn in that same fucking thing into a different storyline, right? I mean, it's essentially they're trying to say, let's do this again, but we already have these characters, you know, in this certain place where they were, you know, after the first one. How could you redo it again? And so they kind of force it, right? Doesn't really work, but
no, it's not like 22 Jump Street, which felt organic as a comedy sequel.
I agree. I mean, those are much better. I mean, I would say 22 stepped up what 21 did. This really just kind of stays the same. You know, really doesn't try to do anything more. But you know, Tim Story, what'd you expect, right? He's really not that. You know.
Yeah, has he ever done anything that's quality? Honestly,
I can't really think. I mean, I do like the Fantastic Four movies that he did, but I mean, there's no saying. Those are passable. No, the first one's really good. The second one, on the other hand, is a little bit just more the same. It's kind of just like exists, kind of like Ride Along 2, I thought.
Yeah,
right?
it's basically the Ride Along 2 of the Fantastic Four franchise.
But the first Fantastic Four I thought was really good.
I would say exactly what you told me about Ride Along. It's pretty much the same fucking movie, but for whatever reason. I'll just tell you, I ate a fucking pot edible the first time I saw Fantastic Four, and I was like, wow, this movie's really fucking good. And then I saw it on like DVD months later, and I was like, it wasn't that good. But for whatever reason, it seemed great, and it seemed like it was about 10 minutes long, even though it's like 85 minutes. It seemed about fucking 10 minutes long in the theater. I should not have ate that fucking edible. I couldn't drive after. I remember that. And my friend's wife had to drive us, for Christ's sakes. So anyways, getting back on topic here. Tell me about The Fifth Wave. I wanted to see this little post-apocalyptic teenage.
I really wanted to see this as well. I thought, you know, I like these.
You do like these.
These
movies. You're pretty kind on these.
You know, Alien Invasion. I thought, ooh. You know, Chloe Grace Moretz, who's just
I like her.
Awesome.
She can't do wrong.
Yeah. And she's, you know, okay with this. The problem is that there's just no meat in this for any of the actors. The storyline's very, very basic, and again it relies on this triangle, this love triangle, you know, these two guys, and it feels as if someone came in and said, all these other movies have these two guys and one girl, what can we do that also has two guys and one girl? It just does not play organically at all.
Yeah, it's just the sad thing is the box office for this looks like it's like the second tier. Is it second tier production wise?
No, not really. I mean, it's just it's your standard young adult thing. So there's not like, you know, there's action, but it's not like a lot of action necessarily. I mean, if I'm thinking like Hunger Games, you know, has a lot, you know, Harry Potter obviously kind of has a lot. But this exists in a world where they go off into the world. So Twilight doesn't have a lot, right? So this has a little bit more than Twilight, I would say. But not, it's really not very action-y oriented. I don't know.
So where does this stand? Is this on the level of Divergent and The Maze Runner, or is this below that?
I would say it's below that, really. You know, just as I mean, when this ended, they definitely leave it open and set up for, you know, the sequels to follow. And I just thought, I mean, I don't really give a shit. I really, when this ends, it's just like, oh, wow, you know. And you can call exactly what's going on in it. You know, as with everything, they try to have a little twist and all this, but it's so painfully obvious from the get-go. I don't. It's not as strongly written as a lot of the other ones, or even conceived. You know, the work on this is. Yeah.
Well, you know, I just thought of a new trivia question for next week's show.
Uh-oh.
It was going to be, whose career did Chloe Grace Moretz kill? The answer is Dakota Johnson. I'm sorry, Dakota Fanning.
Dakota Fanning. How'd she kill her career?
Because where the fuck is that girl? I swear to God.
But why did Chloe Grace Moretz kill it?
I feel like it's the role she would have been getting.
Maybe. I mean, I think Dakota Fanning kind of left on her own, didn't she?
Did she just Macaulay Culkin out?
Let's see. I'm looking her up right now. She got four movies coming out. I wish
Dakota Johnson would go away. I mean, does anybody like Dakota Johnson, really? Honestly?
I kind of don't mind Dakota Johnson.
What have you seen her in?
She has four movies coming out.
What have you seen Dakota Johnson in?
That TV show.
That TV show.
I can't
remember
what that show was called. It got canceled, so.
Yeah, see her in fucking 50 Shades, man.
No, please. I mean, if you're going to pick a shitty movie, I see Chloe Grace Moretz in fucking The Fifth Wave. And tell me she's worth a shit. You won't
be able
to.
I'll
watch
her in anything, though. I like that little girl.
But it's not good. She's not good in it. You can root for her all you want. There's a whole point of that. I watched that movie specifically because I like everything she's been in. And it's not. It doesn't do anything.
She killed it in Carrie.
Yeah, she did. But then again, Carrie is actually a decent flick.
It is. That slept on. It's a good little horror film.
And there's no. It surprisingly is. Even though. And that's a good one because you do know what's going to happen. But somehow they make it new enough, and I think a lot has to do with just her. Like, she kind of draws you in a way. I don't know. She's really good.
That's a good example of a horror reboot done well, in that fact that, like, they do just enough different but keep it the same that it doesn't – or that the source material isn't as beloved as some of the other ones that they've done.
Yeah,
so, true. You know, like the Nightmare on Elm Street one, which I think is a total just a mistake that they tried. And on its own, it had good production value and it was okay, but like it just totally didn't resonate for anybody. I mean, do you remember that one? You saw it. Do you remember it?
I don't. I'm not even sure I saw it.
How have they not redone Chucky? Like, why is there not a child's play?
Oh, God, why would they?
Just with the technology, they could do it so much easier.
It would look so fake, man. I mean, they would do a digital one and it would look terrible.
Yeah, you're right. I guess they tried to with the boy, honest. With these like ventriloquist ones and dummy ones.
That's true, the boy. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Let's move on and talk about let's get to the heat of the matter here. I saw Dirty Grandpa. And
heated up your loins.
Let me preface this by saying that I watched The Odd Couple 2 with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon. Did you see the part 2?
I have, but I don't really remember it.
Oh, it's so inconsequential on anybody's
I'm sure
life. It's like a pillow. It just sits there. It's fluffy. It just doesn't hurt anybody. And it's I've been watching a lot of their movies. I saw Out to Sea recently. I saw some of the Grumpier Old Men.
And the
I
first one's which, great.
First Odd Couple is one of my favorites.
I love the yeah. I always thought you were signing FU meant something other than Felix Underwood or whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, it was just funny, you know, signing all his notes FU.
Well, it's just exactly. And then like the ladle, you know, conversation and things like that. They're just classic dialogue bits in that. And to watch the sequel, it was just so depressing. But it was so just childish and, it just, I mean, non-harmful in any way. And then to watch Dirty Grandpa, where De Niro's, like, introductory scene is he's fucking jerking off as
have you noticed, I mean, the amount that people jerk off in movies now is extraordinarily high.
Oh, yeah, like, masturbation is, like, a completely open thing to joke about. In fact, in this one, he goes, I don't be a pussy, you just walked in on your grandpa taking a number three. He goes, what is a number three? So there are some choice bits in this movie, and De Niro, in the unrated version that I saw, really fucking lets loose on a lot of tangents and stuff. And the movie is extremely thin, but the character of Nick, the cousin to Zac Efron, steals this movie. The stoner loser cousin who just wants to be in good graces with the family is endearing and hilarious. De Niro's good in this. Efron is kind of just playing the Efron part. I mean, he runs around naked for three quarters of the movie and sings. I swear, it's the only reason he did this movie was to show his off his physique and to sing. There's really no reason. It's a kind of an embarrassing role for anyone to take because they're playing straight man De Niro, who isn't really a comedian, but he does well here. I think
it's kind of like the Neighbors 2 commercial where he's like, I gotta create a distraction.
Right, no, it's he starts dancing naked.
And yeah, exactly. The girl's like, I thought you were watching The Money. I'm a woman. I had to watch.
Yeah, that Neighbors 2 commercial is funnier than anything in Dirty Grandpa. But there are some laughs in this movie, so I do give it a moderate recommendation. It's not a world beater, but it's a pretty good diversion for a comedy, and it will make you laugh because De Niro, his goal, he states over and over, is just to fuck some college girl. And that's just what Grandpa wants to do, is just fuck a college girl, you know?
Grandpa's going to die soon, so he might as well go for it.
Basically, and Zoe Deutsch is in this, you know, Leah Thompson's daughter, with Howard Deutsch, who was in Vampire Academy. Real darling girl, great actress too, and has a nice vibe.
Vampire Academy is a terrible movie.
Yeah, no, but she was the one shining spot in that movie, I thought.
Was she? I don't know who she is. I don't remember.
She was the
Main girl?
She was the one that lusted after the main girl, her friend, who was kind of like a protector. Mm-hmm. But she's been in a number of movies now. But, I mean, I don't think this is going to help her career advancement at all. But for the role, it's just nicely done. And a minor recommendation. You'll laugh. But then again, there's like five.
It's a recommendation for me. I mean, I plan on seeing this.
Yeah.
You got to see it once, right?
All right, let's talk about The Revenant, because this is what a movie that I gave a really high praise to. I thought it was the best movie of last year. What'd you think?
I found it overly artistic and boring.
Now, did you find Terrence Malick movies like that, or did you find this was Malick-like?
Fuck yes, I do. But yes, it is. I mean, it's very
introspective in a way.
I just think that this was the wrong story to tell, really. You know, I mean, there are different versions of this story that are far more interesting than this. And they just they neuter DiCaprio in this role, you know, I mean, big time. But if you ever pay any attention to the original stories of this, this is a revenge story, and there is no revenge really in this movie until like the last 15 minutes, and it doesn't make any sense. He's not angry throughout the movie. He doesn't seem to put any fuel, any fire under him necessarily, even though he's sat there and held his dead kid. He's just kind of enduring all this shit that happens to him. And then he just drags himself through the fucking woods. I guess there weren't enough moments other than, you know, people whispering and, you know, gladiator like remembrance scenes. And like if he slips into a subconscious, you know, dream one more time, I would have killed myself. it's completely useless. It doesn't do anything for anyone, you know, and it certainly has nothing to do with rage or fueling any fire of, I need to get these guys for, you know, killing my kid. Which seems to be, I believe, added in, you know, is not really, he didn't have a kid in real life or in the stories, you know, in the legends.
Well, story qualms aside,
I don't know.
You didn't appreciate the cinematography, the camera movement.
Sure, the cinematography is good, but you know what? I mean, I could take a camera out in the woods and do great shit. You know,
cinematography.
It's true. I don't know how to explain this to anybody else, but you know, when these fucking westerns and shit win cinematography stuff, you know, it's kind of you know, it's not, you're shooting God's work, you know, and saying it's yours. You know, I don't know what to say about that. A lot of this movie is sky. I mean, I've never seen people look up at the sky and the camera as well. My other complaint, have you played a video game in the past 5 years? A lot of this stuff plays out and it feels like cutscenes to me. Like people are talking off. Oh, we got to get these shit up the river. You know, we got to get these pelts back in and all this shit's happening and everything. And I feel like I'm about to take the controls and get those pelts up the fucking river, you know? Like, it feels like a rock star game.
Lee on the Oregon Trail over here?
It really does. Red Dead Redemption, you know? I'm sure people know what I'm talking about. You know, these rock star games just like this, or any of the World War II games, you know, the Tom Clancy type stuff. This movie has that feel to it, that first person, you know, I am the camera, I'm here hearing this, and they use surround sound in such a way where these you can clearly hear people off screen, and that's exactly the kind of thing that video games set up nowadays. And so to me, it just pulled me right out of it. I just thought, my God, I feel like I'm in a video game.
You don't think DiCaprio did anything spectacular here?
I don't think he was given a chance to. You know, I thought Tom Hardy was fucking awesome.
Tom Hardy's fucking brilliant.
Unfortunately, he has the whole meat of the movie. He's got all the lines. DiCaprio doesn't speak. He just goes through the whole fucking thing. You know, that's not, I don't think Academy Award winning or hard to do, to drag yourself through the snow and look like you've been beat up.
Disagree with you. I think that DiCaprio brought intimacy to that role. And
I don't think he did. Attention. I don't know that character anymore. I didn't care for him. I didn't do anything to him. He didn't bring me into it one little bit. You know,
well, neither did the director. I would argue with you more, but my buddy Locke, who I've talked about recently, and we're going to get him on this show, my buddy from back east, he was saying the same thing. He said, you know, basically grunting and being in pain doesn't get you an Oscar, or shouldn't get you an Oscar. But I was worried that Hardy was going to beat Stallone in the Oscar category. I had no problem.
I kind of think he should have. I think Tom Hardy should have won. From what I've seen,
Tom Hardy is very, very, very good in that that role, especially because he's not entirely unjustified in what he does. I mean, I hate to say killing the kid obviously is bad, but
he's clearly not.
The whole time, he's not as committed to this whole fucking cause or whatever, and he really just wants to make the best decision so that they all live. And when he sees that there might be a potential that his life's in danger, he makes what is kind of a sane decision.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if he's a sane human individual, but he certainly is like a, you know, psychopath in a sense that he doesn't, his actions are kind of logical, but he doesn't really care, I guess. I don't know. He's kind of able to push things out.
The movie's got a great villain, and it wouldn't work nearly as well if it didn't have Hardy in it, too.
Well, in the true legend of this all, you know, he doesn't get that guy in the end.
Right, and the great – yeah, if you want
– so I don't know.
Wikipedia-ing on the actual –
I don't really like the story that they told, which is a book. You know, it's based on some book some guy wrote about this. And I feel like – I don't know. I don't like the changes they made to it. I thought, you know, the original story had enough in it, and it was interesting enough. And if they had just focused on that a little bit more, although I don't know. I don't know how you successfully take someone who can't speak and who can only drag themselves and make an entire movie about that interesting.
I really thought this had the feel of like a lost Terrence Malick film, and a good one, not like a shitty one.
They're all shitty. I don't know how to tell you that.
Thin Red Line is fantastic.
Shitty movie.
Oh, you're out of your mind. Gorgeous.
It is gorgeous. You're right about that. I mean, but it is a shitty movie.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and give you our review of Creed.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
He brings the popcorn. She brings the roses. Subject Cinema, a tasty new film topic each week with a side order of film reviews.
Yum.
T.C. Kirkham.
Ba-dum-ching.
Kim Brown.
What?
Over 500,000 listeners, and you could be the next one. SubjectCinema.com.
Real movies for real people.
I prefer fake movies for fake people, but you know, to each their own. I think
that podcast is hosted by Devo.
Yeah, right? Whip it.
Whip it real good. All right, so it was recently my birthday, and I think for a birthday present, I asked you to watch Creed.
For your birthday, I watched Creed.
All right, so you know obviously where I stand. Our listeners know where I stand.
You love the movie, so that's why. I really did want to get into this and then have a good discussion on this, because I thought this was a good movie.
Okay,
but I felt it missed the mark for greatness.
Ooh, in where? Well, let's talk about
across the board in a sense, and that's why I kind of want to talk to you. Yeah, I definitely want. Well, I think there's a lot of positives here, you know, but there's just a bit of a misfire throughout the whole thing. I think the positives, the idea in general, right, is such an interesting idea. I'm glad that it actually kind of worked.
Yeah,
because this could have fell really flat on its face. I don't know if it absolutely works, and I'll tell you a little bit why. But I also thought that Stallone got a chance to, flex his chops a little bit here. I especially think that, he's good throughout it. And I thought, all right, he's good. There's one scene in here when they're in the locker room and he's trying to get him to man up, basically. Adonis is trying to get Rocky to man up. And Rocky's basically telling him, you know, we were never family, this and that. You remember that scene?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, my God, that delivery from Stallone and that entire scene, really. was a magical moment.
See, I thought the moment when he had cancer, that shit hit. The facial movement and everything like that was to me the connecting moment. I know exactly what you're talking about because he goes back and has that conversation with him, which is just – and I thought their first interaction was played very nicely by both of them. I mean, you can't discount Michael Jordan's performance either.
I can, only in the sense that I don't think the role was right. I don't think they wrote this in a way that was right. You know, I mean, the movie's called Creed. It's about a kid who's has an estranged father, right, who's dead and who has left this huge legacy behind for him and who he didn't really know about until his stepmom, if you will, right, the wife of that's not his real mom, but the wife of Creed, came up and pulled him out of, like, juvenile detention, right, and kind of gave him a new shot at life, one which he doesn't really feel like he deserves. At what point in this movie does he really learn about his father? There are none, right? It's not here because this is about Rocky Balboa, right?
Yeah, he's so not that's there the to problem, get close to his father. Yeah.
There was this, you know, and they didn't do that. I mean, there are scenes in the beginning of this movie when he has that YouTube thing projected up and he does the boxing along with him. He's Rocky Balboa fighting his father, right? That's an important moment. He's not his dad, right? He's not looking at his dad as, I want to be a boxer because of my dad. That's not what drives him to become a boxer. Right? He wants to be Rocky Balboa. So what the fuck is the point of this when he finally takes the Creed name? It just doesn't land for me. And that's really the whole basis for the movie. I'd also say that the love story doesn't land at all. And which is something that's unfortunate because Rocky, I feel like if we're going to retread that, we're going to walk through Rocky's shoes and really do this just as Rocky did, you know, have the love story, have the boxing and shit. It has to be on par, if not better than that. It's just not
there. I thought
it
was a sweet love story. I thought it was the best.
It's sweet.
It's
okay. You know, but that's just all it is, right? Boy meets girl. Boy loses girl. They have stupid fights. You know, oh, you didn't tell me Creed was your dad.
Right. That is a very contrived.
And then in
2 seconds,
he's got her turned around, right? Yeah, because it's a movie moment, right? And that's kind of – you can see the you can see Ryan Coogler – as an up-and-comer in this. You know, he's not quite there to have made this movie yet, I don't think.
I'll say this, though. I would disagree with you. I think this is the perfect movie for him to make at this career. I hope he revisits something later that is in this vein because he's got a touch for writing characters that are common that we know but adding a new dimension. I didn't think Rocky had anything left in him. Did you? I mean, you think this series has anything left after Balboa? This is better than Balboa.
I don't know if this is better than any of the other Rockies. I'm not sure that this is. It's certainly its own thing. You know, I kind of feel about it. So I don't know that I really want to compare it because it's not really canon. It's kind of, its own, which is not a bad thing. You know, I'm not putting it down, but it's just not
the sequence in the first fight, the one camera move, is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean the fighting scene. Okay. The fighting scenes and the workout scenes are fucking fantastic, right? I mean, those are kind of the saving grace of this entire movie.
Well, that's what
are
these movies.
No, that's not true. You know, I mean, the thing about the Rocky movies and, you know, I don't know. When you say you like a movie, you don't like a movie, we're obviously having a conversation here where you really like a movie and I just kind of like it. It's kind of ineffable, right? Like, there's no way – you can kind of give hints to people, right? But you can't, like – it's hard to say, like, why I like this and you didn't.
Right.
And so the Rocky movies, to me, are kind of like fucking that. Like, they're kind of, I don't know, punch drunk when you really go through them because they're so different. And so my favorite Rocky movie is Rocky IV. And the reason I like it so much is because it doesn't have the problem that this movie has. It doesn't weigh itself down in the external crap, you know. I mean, it's there. You know, he deals with Adrian. He deals with all this stuff. But it's really, you know, about him fighting and training and him versus the Russians, you know, that whole thing. And that, to me, makes that a great movie. But what makes Rocky a great movie, the first one? Well, it's all that extra shit, right? Makes it good. So how can that be? You know, how can you have one movie that's as good without it and one movie that's good because of it, right? And to me, that's kind of, you know, a problem when you look at something like this and it doesn't reach that greatness to me, especially because that shit's already existed. I mean, we've had 6 films before this. You know, this is a lot to live up to. And it didn't deliver. I don't know. I mean, it was good. Again,
See,
I'm not
thought
saying
this
it's
was,
bad.
I thought this was great. I'm Jordan was great. I love the fact, you know, when you say Coogler wasn't ready for this, I don't know. There was moments that are purely from a young filmmaker's perspective, like with the line about the cloud, you know, and watching 24/7 on the iPad.
I mean,
like,
it's so – I mean, the thing about the cloud is fucking a stretch at this point, you know. I mean, really –
Rocky Balboa would not know about the fucking iCloud.
Oh, give me a break, man. I mean, not know. Lots of people know about the cloud and shit. It's just ridiculous.
He had a flip phone, for Christ's sakes. but no, music. How about the score?
Well, that's my other complaint. You know, yeah, it's great music, and it works really well. It's also Rocky music. It has nothing to do with Creed. Is this Rocky or Creed? Make up your mind. What am I watching here? Is this a... You know, are we going down the same river, or are we forming a Y here, and we're gonna go off and make these Creed movies, or is Rocky will always be a part of this Creed stuff? We will never get rid of Rocky. You know, can Rocky ever die?
They're trying.
All they do is drag this dude through the fucking mud, right? I mean, I don't know if this guy will ever be dead.
He can't die.
I know. Well, he kind of can't, right? I mean, I understand all the hurdles and the problems that made this what it is. I just wish that there was something more that could have been done, you know, that could have really made it stand out. Because I don't know. When you make a lot of this about just a standard love scene, you know, or a standard love story, and the real standard at that, which Rocky is not, you know.
Character of Adonis isn't nearly as eccentric or shy. He's more.
He's
arrogant,
not even interesting, man.
He's Creed's
not...
son. It's not Balboa's son.
Yeah. So why is
I think he was
dad?
A very interesting person in the fact
I
that
doubt
I,
it.
The opening shot too in the juvenile detention center is beautiful. I love that. How we come with one area, run to the back, go through that. I love that opening with the Creed bring up and the fight in Tijuana and all that, and the fact that he's working the white collar job and he's got the bruises. But he is driving a nice car. He can get money from – he doesn't need to be doing these things is kind of the idea.
Well, nothing seems to really push him to do this. I don't really know why he wants to do this ever. And no real – there's nothing given even that he can say to anyone to why he really wants to do this, right? And they ask him, and he really has no good answer for it. And he just, I don't know, he doesn't like his dad through the whole fucking movie. And when he does take the Creed name, it feels more like he's taking it at, kind of because other people have said you should take
it's
it.
Good for promotion, right? Yeah.
The girlfriend talks him into it, and Rocky Balboa is like, all we know about Creed is that he's a good guy, right? I mean, it just felt like, where was the connection between him and his dad? Why take the name? Why do all this stuff? I felt at the end of this, we're no better off than we were at the beginning.
Well, he just wanted to feel like he wasn't a mistake, right? Wasn't that the whole theme? Nobody tells Rocky in the corner there at the last round. He was there for something. Well, you think it's good. I think it's great. It's still two positive reviews. So I encourage people to check it out because it does contain a great Stallone performance.
Yeah. And the fight scene. I mean, that last fight scene is really good. Especially with the music and stuff. Oh, yeah. I know. But the last one's the good one. good one. The big one. The one at the end. It's a Rocky movie. It's the fight at the end.
The big fucking fight scene. Yeah. And, of course, the last shot on the steps, it leaves it open for another. And I left that theater humming and on a great, a high. So I was ready for another one that moment. All right. Let's talk about what do you got for an online streaming pick? Got anything you want to recommend that's streaming?
No.
Nah, you got that? No Dice? How about Dice?
Yeah, Dice is good. If you have Showtime, watch the Andrew Dice Clay Show.
There you go.
I'm recommending
Team Foxcatcher, another Infinite documentary. I think this is
the
third
Netflix thing, huh?
Yeah, it's this one's done all by home videos, though, of the wrestlers and John DuPont himself. And it's just another fucking eerie portrait of what was going on and just a sad... Sad thing. Dave and Mark Schultz grew up here in the Bay Area, Palo Alto High, and I know a guy who was their high school wrestling teacher and sometimes wrestling coach with them, and just the stories he tells me that they were just great human beings, and the fact that the nicest one of the two gets killed makes it even sadder. And it just comes across. And you respect the fact that Steve Carell really did a fucking great job portraying John DuPont. This guy is a nut. I mean, a nut along the lines of Robert Durst and The Jinx.
Uh-huh.
Worth watching. That's on Netflix. Let's do Addicts, because we're addicts.
Mm.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Okay, we didn't talk about Deadpool. I don't know.
Let's talk about Deadpool. I'm sorry. We forgot all about Deadpool.
Deadpool is coming into Trailer Addict here.
I forgot all about this. No. Deadpool's coming everywhere else, though.
Yeah, he is. That's for damn sure.
So I give this one another real high review. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought this was really good. I mean, I'm surprised.
Right, surprised is the best word.
Yeah, because I don't know. I guess I didn't really know what to expect from it. And it really doesn't. I'm talking about a basic storyline, right? There really is no storyline.
Told you, it's a flashback within a flashback within a flashback.
Yeah, like he kind of explains how he becomes Deadpool, and in all this, you know, loses his girlfriend and then gets her back, and that's really the whole movie.
And it's a cheap movie,
but it is and it isn't. You know, the money's on the screen. You know, the special effects are there, but there's no. It is lacking like the huge Avengers moment, right? Or like the big Marvel moments.
Well, which is why he leaves his guns in the
taxi. Or like cities
taxi.
Are being taken down. Yeah. Yeah, right. The final fight takes place basically in a ship junkyard, you know?
With four people.
Yeah. With very few people, yes.
But
still
good.
The comedy works.
Comedy.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds really works in this role. TJ Miller, who's, you know, always a favorite. I everyone was great, and I loved the bringing in Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead was great. Those were perfect characters to be in this, because they had a lot of fun with them.
Yeah, the disposition of Colossus, you know, kind of like, come on, Wade, you know, he's just like kind of like he's an arrogant child. And I just thought Ryan Reynolds found his career role. He's as good in this. I thought.
Yeah, he's been searching for this, hasn't he?
Right. Yeah, but he fought for this and it worked out. But don't you think that no one else could be Deadpool now after this? Like kind of like Downey's Iron Man, you know? And
yeah, because no one quite has the same voice or cadence that he does. So,
and that kind of intelligence, smart ass. You know, he looks like a meathead, but he's got a very sharp wit. You know. I really enjoyed that fucking movie.
Yeah, and I thought it worked. You know, they both him and Marina Baccarin were able to play up that smart-assy thing. And then in a second, you know, in that instance, like turn it into real. And you kind of get the feeling that the whole time they have feelings. Even though he's joking and fucking around and stuff, you know that, you know, there's something going on underneath that.
Yeah, and they do a nice wordplay with one another there. Yeah. A one-upmanship that's kind of like a His Girl Friday banter from the 40s, which is... not easy to do, and they both pull that off very well a couple times in that movie.
And the action is good. I mean, for having, you know, less of a budget than a lot of the other movies.
Yeah, for something that was shot on the budget of Elektra, it works. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's outgrossed Batman and Superman, which is the lesson to be learned, you know. Make it fun and not insulting. From the opening shot with, you know, the... People's sexiest man.
The opening credits. That are ridiculous. Yeah, directed by like some douchebag or whatever.
An overpaid tool.
Kind of stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
An English guy with an accent. Was
it
villain?
It is funny. I mean, he does, you know, make fun of himself a lot. Ryan Reynolds in this, so it's not just about, you know, making fun of other people. It's really just about making fun of everything, isn't it? I mean, it's a very meta movie. Making fun about.
Yeah, he's above everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that he doesn't get punished for it. You know, that's the thing about this. Like, he doesn't learn a lesson that he shouldn't be this way. You know, if anything, he does what Colossus tells him not to do, right? And kills the guy, which, you know, we all see coming. But at the same time, you kind of think, like, even during Colossus's speech and everything, right, at the end where he could become this great hero and all this stuff, you're kind of with him in the sense of just fuck it, you know?
Yeah, just end this fucking thing and get it over with already.
Yeah,
it was a. So you're just one of now of the many fans of Deadpool. So join the ranks.
Yeah, I am ready for a sequel. You know.
Yeah, this thing is sequel ready, is it not?
Yeah, this is whatever ready because there's no point to it, right? You can just make up whatever you want for the sequel. I mean, it can just keep going on. I don't know what they would do, right? Which is another good thing because now, we don't necessarily know where this is going to go, which will keep it interesting.
Well, I had such a fleeting interest in the X-Men films over the years, and this even invigorated my enthusiasm for the X-Men franchise, I guess, because I thought even, you know, him fucking around and with Wolverine.
He went to the house.
Yeah, he goes to the house.
Such a big house, so we can only afford two of you guys?
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of, you know, like you said, a lot of meta in there. All right, well, let's move on now and talk about some trailers since we're already in
all
the
right,
attic.
What do we got?
We got The Magnificent Seven. This is Antoine Fuqua's reimagining of the classic Western. This thing has been in production turmoil for years. At one point, Tom Cruise was going to star. It's now being headlined by Denzel Washington.
Yeah, it wasn't, there were a myriad of
yeah, there was a
big
lot of people. I want to say Will Smith was attached to
this.
That's
what I was trying to, yeah. I was trying to think if that was true or not, but that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Well, I think they were going to try to get Will Smith and Tom Cruise as a possible project. It's now panned out to Denzel Washington and Chris Pratt.
Bruce Willis at one point.
So,
But a lot. Yeah, I mean, the trailer isn't, I don't know. Is this too hokey?
Something's off here, is it not?
Right? I feel weird when I watch this trailer because you see Denzel and you think, okay, this is weird. And then Pratt shows up and you think, where are the Velociraptors in a way? You know, I kind of think like, this
Pratt's
is weird.
Pratt's a little too modern for me in this. I don't know.
Exactly. It feels, I don't know, era-wise. That's why it feels kind of goofy, really, to me. Like, shouldn't this be, I don't know, maybe a little less fun?
You know,
or something?
I would even take the seriousness of 310 to Yuma. This is reminding me of Bad Girls from the early 90s, you know?
Right? Yes. Yeah. I mean, that is kind of how it does have a very 90s, comedic Western vibe to it.
Or Posse? Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is something. Well, this trailer is for a film. This is a very quick teaser for something that's coming out in September. So maybe when we get a more fully developed trailer, this will take shape a little better. But so far, like you said, this is. Something's lacking here, either in the marketing or in the fact that this trailer is off. Speaking of marketing, can we quickly talk about how Lionsgate continually fucks their movie marketing up? I mean, not only was Rambo mismarketed, I mean, they have terrible marketing.
Oh, name it. Their trailers are some of the worst in the industry as far as I'm concerned.
Look at the one-sheet poster for Criminal. It is the
– Does it have snakes on it?
Remember
when they loved snakes?
Oh, yeah. That was big on the Rambo trailer. And
snakes and everything.
And all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I'm telling you, the one sheet for Criminal, the Kevin Costner film that's out right now, is so bad. I cannot believe that is actually, like, releasable. That somebody came up with that and they said, oh, yeah, what's going to go with that? It's terrible. All right. Deepwater Horizon, Mark Wahlberg's infinite bid for to be taken seriously as an actor. I mean, this is
again,
about the
– he's still doing this?
So this trailer obviously is about
I thought Transformers Age of Extinction pretty much sealed the deal.
Well, let me tell you a funny story about this. So I'm watching Batman and Superman, and this trailer comes on. Mm-hmm. And the guy behind me, who clearly is hired a giraffe's ass, is telling his girlfriend, because this trailer starts, and Wahlberg's sitting there, and the little girl's talking about, my daddy fights the dinosaurs, you know, because she's talking about the analogy. The guy behind me goes, it's Transformers 5. And the girl goes, oh, and so like the thing goes on and on and on.
Awesome.
He goes, oh yeah, it's like the new Transformers movie. And so it's like keeps like telling his girlfriend all about it, right?
Until, you gotta keep selling it, man.
Until the fucking oil explodes, and I'm just like, this is how movies get all fucked up.
It's like at the end of it, they go, where's the Transformers?
Yeah, this movie, the new Transformer fucking looks like shit.
Was the Transformers just a big old thing on the ocean? The fuck
is
that?
I didn't really pay attention to this trailer because, A, it was loud as shit. And all I could hear was this guy behind me thinking, and there's like a screeching, you know, when it goes to black and comes out. But this does look good. I mean, it's serious.
Well, I think everything uses Transformers sound in trailers at this point, right?
Definitely that Tron music for a long time was being used. Remember that?
Yeah, but now they love the...
Yeah, you're right.
You know, they just love that and everything. I feel like Transformers are going to pop out of every movie.
Maybe
this
guy was
every
waiting
movie
for.
Trailer. Yeah.
I just thought it was humorous. This guy sees Wahlberg and the mention of a dinosaur, and he's like, yep, Transformers 5.
Got it.
Like, oh, man. Sorry you're disappointed about a fucking natural disaster that happened.
Yeah, I don't know about this movie. I mean, it looks interesting enough, but... I didn't even know that this was like a big part of the story. I guess it would be, but I don't know. What are you thinking about this one? You think this is going to do? I think this does nothing for Mark Wahlberg. That's for damn sure.
This is like Everest of last year.
That's kind of how it felt to me. Yeah, I don't agree with that. It just kind of feels like a story.
You can marvel at and go, well, that was very, very well done.
Interesting enough, but
I don't really care, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a big human connection here.
Now, I think the Boston Marathon drama that he's going to do, you know, from the bombing there.
Right.
That looks a little bit like has more potential coming out this a year later. But these late year bids, I mean, what is Mark Wahlberg coming like the fucking Christmas Day release god or what? This guy is fucking in Christmas Day movies all the time now.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, if it's not a comedy at this point, he's kind of misstepping.
Well, he is doing Daddy's Home too, so.
I'm sure he is. I mean, I'm not like the biggest fan of Daddy's Home, but, you know. For his career, yeah, that makes a hell of a lot more sense than something like Deepwater Horizon, which is just, you know, out of the dark.
Well, it's also with director Peter Berg, who he teamed up with on Lone Survivor. So I think they have a track record of making hits out of these real life kind of horror stories.
I think a war movie is different than Fighting Fires on
captured
on the oil
something
platform.
Before American, you know, some sort of zeitgeist before American Sniper did the same, even to greater effect. Let's move on and talk about our last trailer of the night, and that is Hands of Stone, the Roberto Duran film, but this is being told from the perspective of his legendary trainer, played by Robert De Niro, and a bit jarring after it seems to be.
I feel like he's going to do a little bit of voiceover here, and then he's going to disappear for a while, and then he's going to come in, you know, a little bit, and then kind of go away. I don't know. To me, it felt like he was kind of doing, like he's in it, but he's not really in it.
Kind of like Anthony Hopkins in Alexander. He's like doing like this is the story of a great
man. That's how it felt like to me. Like he's going to start out and like tell you the story of this guy, but like this guy is going to up and cup and like he's going to work his way up to De Niro and then he'll be in it for a little bit, you know. I don't know. I could be totally wrong. That's just the vibe I got from this trailer.
This trailer is not very good. This looks like the level of a TV movie. I've seen a lot of boxing films and I can't say this one looks particularly well done on any level. Other than having De Niro in it, who, you know, you could say is the Raging Bull connection, but I could also say is the Grudge Match connection. So
that's what I felt the Grudge Match. I thought, oh, you did a boxing movie, so now you're getting shoehorned into this one.
Back into that one. But Edwin Rodriguez looks to be in great shape for this. He has a passing resemblance to Duran. The book that this is based on, Hands of Stone, I've actually read, and is extremely interesting and a great read. I mean, Duran's mother was knocking out mules. And he was too. Seriously, and that's how he got his name, Hands of Stone. He was knocking out fucking mules back in his hometown there. So getting Usher Raymond to play Sugar Ray Leonard, probably not the greatest bit of casting. I mean, has he been in anything since In the Mix?
No, but I did like In the Mix, embarrassingly enough. And your girl's in that movie.
So. My girl is in that movie, so I can't hate. Like Simone. I don't even know what her name is. It's Emmanuel
Chikriki, man.
I just call her Simone from Entourage.
Yeah, you were about to badmouth In the Mix till I got you there. I got you with that
you
one.
You did. You know what I thought of immediately? I hate that movie. And I was like, nah, she's in that movie. It's all right. I thought that's watchable. Do you remember that time period, though? It's like from the late 90s to like the mid 2000s when they were trying to launch singers in starring roles, obviously with Glitter, but like On the Line with Lance Bass. Remember that shit?
I do, yeah.
There was a lot.
It didn't
of
work at
like
all.
There was one with Cisco. I think it was like Get Over It or something like that.
He was. I mean, barely in that. But I mean, there was that. Even after that, there was.
I mean, they launched LL Cool J in like Halloween. There was a whole like movement of getting like music and rap stars and R&B guys and pop stars in these fucking movies. It was a very strange little run they did there for a while.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thanks for reminiscing with me on that. We'll have to do DeLorean to that one weekend.
Oh, that's okay. That'll be a bad weekend.
We can do a retrospective podcast of like Valentine. Remember that one? David Boreanaz and Denise Richards.
That cemented his he should be only on TV career.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, you get to stay over here.
I was like, oh God, you're definitely just a TV actor, aren't you?
Well, it took a few more of them for Denise Richards to get found out. So, I mean,
that's because she's probably fucking the producers, you know.
Well, at that point, she'd been a Bond girl, and I guess that got her like a little bit of weight. But ask Tanya Roberts.
Really? So, like, the worst. I mean, yeah, I don't see how that got her any kind of weight.
If anything, it made her, you know, fucking...
I mean, that was one of the worst reviewed fucking thing. Yeah.
Laughable.
Her performance was not good.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 290. Now, we want to thank you all for joining us on this great, great episode. We have to pat ourselves in the back. But we'll be back next week with actually a retrospective podcast. And then the following week with episode 300.
We'll be doing some Denise Richards movie.
Exactly. We could do a David Boreanaz one, yeah. But there is only one.
She does. She swallows. You do know that. I mean, that's a good thing.
What?
If you haven't, look up her interview on Howard Stern. Oh, it's mind-boggling how he gets people to say certain things.
I swear to God, he gets them all fucked up before he comes on.
My God, but yeah, she gets her to admit all that shit.
Anal sex the next fucking
it's crazy. Yeah.
All right, good to know. So I'm going to sign off and Google Howard Stern. <Jeez Richards. laughs> No, guys, thanks for joining us. And speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh, my. Another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!